is on Egyptian style meditations. Now, for some of you who've done my courses, do you know why we're doing Egyptian style meditations? Karen. Karen, are you just kidding? Okay. Well, build us a pyramid, quick.
Yeah.
Now, the reason is that, have you heard of Atlantis? Some of you haven't been to the classes. The previous root race, the previous human race was Atlantis. Since Atlantis, there have been several stages of the human race, and we are currently near the end of the fifth stage. Okay, so the first stage of Atlantis finally ended about 10 to 12,000 BC. And a lot of cultures said the deluge, the flood. Now, in many cultures, is that story of the ending of a race. And the first wave after Atlantis was in ancient India, a culture there, which, although there's people everywhere else, that was the driving force for evolution. Various shifts happened then, which we're going to fully now. And then the second stage was Persian, and the third stage was the Egyptian. And the Egyptian stage was, the heyday of the Egyptian stage was about 4000 BC to 2000, or about 1500 BC. Even though the Egyptian culture finally ended with the invasion of the Greeks, Alexander the Great and the Ptolemies, really from about 300 BC, nonetheless, the height of the Egyptian culture ended by about 1500 BC. So for about 2000 years, the Egyptian race was the heyday. Then the fourth stage was the Greek-Roman stage, and various things happened then. And we are the fifth stage. Our stage started, well, the date's been given in various lectures, 1414 AD, and will end in about 300-400 years, about 2500 and something AD. So we've got a few hundred years left, which that isn't that long. Each stage lasts about 2000 years. Now, the rule is that whatever happened in the third stage repeats in the fifth stage. I won't fully explain why, but the first and the seventh mirror each other, the sixth and the second, the third and the fifth, and the fourth stands alone. They're in a kind of arc. Now, what happened in the fourth stage, the Greek-Roman, was an incarnation, a descent into your bodies. You all had lives at each of these stages. The descent into your body of what? Can someone tell me what came into the body properly for the first time during the Greek? The ego, the sense of self, your ego, your individuality. Before then, you didn't really believe or feel you were an individual person. Before then, you felt you were part of the tribe, part of the nation. So the Egyptian. Now, we are going past that point. We're in the fifth, so we're losing our ego again. We're becoming egoless. Now, the initiations that happened in the Egyptian stage happen again, but in the opposite direction. The driving force for the Egyptian initiations was to try to bring the ego down into the body, to try to lead the ego down. It can't fully get in until the fourth stage. This is the third stage, but it has to make that descent. So what they did is they tried to preserve memories of their life by making the sense that their life was their life, by actually having a memory of their life. It reinforces your sense of self, as opposed to your life just dissolving and you don't remembering anything. So the key thing was mummification. They mummified bodies, and they put those mummies into tombs and protected. Because the thing is that when you're not in your body, you can't fully protect your body. And you hover around your body in what's called the etheric body. So the Egyptians needed a lot of protection spells to keep their mummified bodies from being desecrated. the temples and the tombs that the mummified bodies were in, depending on how rich you were, had to be very preserved and kept secret. And it wasn't just about grave robbers, it was also entities. There was a lot of awareness of magic, black magic, in ancient Egypt, which isn't fully recognized by the Egyptologists. There were a lot of spells carved on the inside of the tomb, protecting you from invasion from the underworld. And there were a lot of dark beings wanting to corrupt the mummies. A huge amount. I mean, the chances are most of the people who have illness in any way in their bodies now had some desecration of a mummified body in ancient Egypt. Otherwise, your body wouldn't be damaged now. So one meditation we're going to do is we're going to get you to feel what a mummified body would look like in ancient Egypt, and that you're looking at it, and you're looking at your life, that the life that you had. Now, ideally, what you should feel is that you're now able to dissolve your life, because the ancient Egyptian was not able to, they had to reinforce their lives, they had to repeat the memories of their life, because when the soul, the Egyptian soul, looked back at its mummy after it died, it would see from the mummy and around it lots of memories painted and carved in statues reminding it of the things it did. Now, if that same thing happened to you now, when you died and you look back in your life and you kept seeing your memories, what would happen to you? If that same situation was to be ongoing and you kept looking at your life in the afterlife and it kept reminding you what you did, you would not be able to let go, and you would be stuck in the lower astral plane, and then you would be attacked by by entities. So now we have to actually do the opposite. We have to dissolve our lives before we die, so that when we do die, we've got nothing left, no memories. The more advanced the soul is, the more advanced you are, the less you take in the spiritual world. So to do that, what you need to do is A, go back to ancient Egypt and sense if there's any problems, and 2, imagine now when you die, your physical body is in a suitably protected space, a temple again, but that temple has to now no longer be physical, but etheric. And then imagine if your life is dissolving in front of you. And if there's any bits of your energy or your body or life that seems like it's stuck, it'll be shown to you. And if you can dissolve it before you die, then it's easier. Because when you die, honestly, you look back and you go, God, why didn't I try to start this earlier? Is this up too late? No one told me. I'm stuck now. So let's start now. Okay. So visualize then you're in a column of golden white light, a bubble of light. For a moment, just imagine that this is the only moment that counts. There is no past, there is no future, but what you make it. And just take your awareness to your physical body. Have the thought or the imagination, the feeling, that you have had a relationship with your physical body now for many lifetimes. You have passed into further lives, into next lives, the blueprint of the physical body you had, continuing experiences through your body, from life to life. physical body has become a home for your soul. So ask or intend that you can look back through time, as if there are mists of time, and you're going all the way back to ancient Egypt, looking with your mind's eye, the eyes of your soul. And there were many times when you were mummified, but focusing on one of them, imagine, like an aerial view, you are looking down on a secret temple and a secret tomb, maybe carved into the mountains of the Valley of the Kings, or buried under the sands by Cairo. And there, a mummified body is lying within a sarcophagus, surrounded by stillness, darkness, the quietness of a tomb. To spend the next couple of minutes looking at your mummified body and sensing the atmosphere in that tomb. Particularly ask to be shown if any memories are still lingering from that mummified body in your present body, as if any part of your body now is part of that mummy. Is a continuation of that life. First thing to intend is ask to rewrite, to reinforce the protection spells around your mummified body. Imagine you and spirit guides add extra strong protective spells now, because your mummified body is now going to leave that tomb. And start dissolving in the world outside. that's going on, imagine in this life, as if you project... Have you all been to Egypt?
No.
No, okay. Well, you've seen the pictures. And that's good
seen
enough.
Movie, yes.
Yeah.
Was it all the Egyptians that were mummified, or wasn't it just the Pharaoh?
One or two probably weren't mummified, you know. Now, everyone got mummified to some degree at some point. I mean, the culture, I mean, I know it said the peak was 2,000 years, but the culture ran for 4,000 years, you know. But the cheapest form of mummification was to have your dead body just buried in the hot sand, and that's it. The dry, hot sand would desiccate and dry out the body. As long as the jackals don't eat you, dig out, you know, the remains, you might be okay. Or, you know, okay, put into a wooden box and put into the sand. The hot, dry sand will dry out the body and preserve it. Okay, so the Sphinx, of course, the Egyptian Sphinx predates Egypt. You probably know that. The Egyptian Sphinx wasn't built by the ancient Egyptians, nor was the Great Pyramid. Some of the later pyramids were, like in Saqqara, but who built the pyramid anyway, and the Sphinx? The Atlanteans, yeah. I mean, it's obvious. But anyway, the Egyptian Sphinx represents a certain power of Leo, from the star system Leo. And Leo gives you the power to enter, bring your ego into your heart. Now, later, there's the Greek Sphinx, who gives the Greeks, like Oedipus, the riddle. And what's the riddle of the Sphinx? What has four legs in the morning, two legs at midday, and three legs in the evening? And the answer, and if you don't answer properly, you would have to die, the Sphinx would kill you. And Oedipus was the first human to answer correctly, at which point the Theban, the Greek Sphinx, had to kill itself. And what's the answer, Dina?
Man.
The human. Because you are born crawling on in the morning of your life, in the midday of your life, you could stand on 2 feet. At the later days, you have a walking stick. But, you know, it's not simple as just saying man or woman. It means you have to say it because you know yourself. If you know who you are and you can say your I am, you can say I am a human, I am a man, I am a woman. Because if you just said, you know, man, woman, and you don't know what that is, if you don't know what the concept of personhood is, of being an individual, then you will die. So by now what's happened is whatever we experienced in outer life in ancient times, in mythic times, are now inner experiences. They are built into your aura. So everyone is receiving the riddle of the Sphinx, and it's going to get stronger, the riddle. The Sphinx is now etheric, and you all have to face the Sphinx in stages, more and more and more. And when you face the Sphinx will ask you again, who are you? And what do you have to say now? What's the answer now to the etheric Sphinx? I won't tell you. Let's see if you can find out in this meditation what you are going to say to the Sphinx now. And the question is, who are you? What are you in the stages of your life? And then the second thing we're going to do in this meditation is, you all know the birth chart, the astrology moment of birth is so important. Why? Why? Someone tell me, quickly.
Stars, constellation,
yes.
Positions.
That's right. At that very moment, for that particular location, all the planets and the stars are in their exact position to describe your destiny. They are a blueprint for your destiny on Earth. And that destiny can unfold because you enter a body in order to manifest that destiny through. So, next what's going to be probably not quite as important yet, but will eventually become more important than the birth chart, more powerful than the birth chart in the next few hundred years, will be your death chart. And casting the astrology chart for the moment and location of your death will have a profound bearing on your afterlife. The death chart describes the journey you are making into the spiritual world. Because like I said, more and more the physical life you've had will start disappearing as if you'd never had it. So what will be more important then is the death chart. And that means dying at the right point, in the right moment, in the right way, will be so important again. And the ancient Egyptians were a culture of death. They worshipped the dead, they prepared their bodies for dead. You know, living was only part of lesser importance than the meaning of dying and living in the afterlife the right way. And we're going to have the same experience. Okay? So what we'll do in the second part of the meditation is ask to activate your death chart. And you just visualize. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, how far ahead in the future is. You're hoping it's a long way ahead. But whenever it is, you imagine at the moment of your death that someone casts an astrology chart for you. Now, of course, whoever that is will be your higher self, of course. Your higher self casts an astrology chart and you see the chart above you as you fly out of your body. You see the planets and the stars, you see the horizon, you see the different angles and the points. You use your death chart as a map to go into the spiritual world with. Just as you used the astrology chart as a map to enter the earth, to bring the planets down. Okay? So, again, imagine you're in a bubble of light. Now imagine that since you were born in this life, there's been a presence near you, but you didn't know it. It was next to you all the time, and it was the Sphinx, in etheric form, in energetic form, watching and waiting. Slowly, asking you a question, and that question is going to get stronger as the Sphinx gets closer. So ask to receive that question from the Sphinx. What are you? Who are you? Do you know your I am? Do you know yourself? Visualize the Sphinx approaching you and asking you that. Sense if you know the answer within your heart. And if you don't, or you can't feel the answer, imagine the Sphinx kills you. Kills your lower self, so that you can be reborn like a phoenix, and this time know who you are. many deaths and rebirths as you want, until finally you can give the Sphinx an answer. Particular, imagine now that as you give the Sphinx your answer, the answer means showing the Sphinx all your suffering, all your pain. And to understand that through your suffering you have understood yourself. Imagine opening up your heart to the Sphinx and revealing all the suffering you have had in this life at all levels. And that is what the Sphinx needed you to show. Imagine pulling a cross in your heart to show the Sphinx you have been carrying a cross all your life and you are ready for the next step. Carrying the cross represented that you carried all your suffering, you fully accepted, you bore yourself. then imagine that you die in some future moment at a certain future place, and imagine hovering suspended high above, as if written in the sky is a vast astrology chart written energetically by your soul. Imagine or ask that your death be fully timed with your true astrology death chart, the astrology death chart of this incarnation. Present, sensing perhaps how more empty, more space you have in the present. Questions, points so far?
So is that what your remedy called Sphinx would do?
Might do. So let's go on to the next one. Is to the ancient Egyptian, in the mummification process, there was a review of the afterlife of your life. It was called the weighing of the heart. The heart would be weighed on some scales against a yardstick, and that was against the feather of a goddess called Truth. Maat was her name, M-A-A-T. And her feather represented the highest truth. So if your heart was good and you'd committed no sin, it was lighter than the feather even, and the feather is pure, then you would be blessed by the god Osiris and be allowed to go on into the afterlife to a better place where you're preparing for the next life in a better way. But if your heart was heavy with karma or sin, etc., then it would be heavier and sink in these light scales, and the heart would have to be cast down into these fiery underworld flames, where there's a dragon called Apophis, who would have to purify your soul before you are ready to be reweighed. Same process, but in the inverse. Your heart is being measured again. At death, etherically speaking, of course. And in your heart is everything you have done. But now, whereas before in ancient Egypt, you would be weighed against your deeds and your thoughts and your feelings, everything you have done in your life. Now, do you know what you'd be, what's going to be measured in your heart now in the afterlife? Any ideas? It won't be your life that's going to be measured. If it is your life that's going to be measured, that means you're not fully evolved. You haven't fully developed to the next level because you still got stuff to evolve in your life.
For the future?
Sort of. Huh? Yes. What will be measured now in your heart in the afterlife is what you have done for others. How your deeds have helped other people's lives. And how theirs has influenced, you know, basically the collaboration and the relationship and the transpersonal side of you. And that's going to be much more important. And there's a rule, you see, what you do for others helps you far more than what you try to do for yourself in this and in future lives. Now, it doesn't mean you've got to go out and start giving the shirt off your back, you know, and give your money away and, you know, and help everyone and be left living in a cardboard box, you know, on the embankment with no food. No, what you've got to be selfish as well, but you've got to have a, you know, you've basically got to help others who in an unconditional, discerning sort of way, okay? And helping others, not because you're sorry for them, but because spirit demands it now. As I said, there's a fine line between sacrifice in the wrong way, karmically giving your power away, and sacrifice based on true selflessness in an unconditional way that sets you free. So let's do this medit. What time is it?
10:35. 9:35.
So let's now do this meditation where you're. Has anyone seen The Last Judgment by Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican?
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the most powerful images to hold in your mind if you can. And it's really an image of the Christ. And it's got nothing to do with Christianity, it's a principle. And the Christ codes now are the scales. What you're weighed against isn't a goddess called truth. Now you're weighed against, through a kind of measuring yardstick of the Christ codes. They form the scales on the other side, and you get shown how true you really were. So, let's do this one and see if you can really see how you have influenced other people and how they have influenced you. And you can undo it now. If there are things that you've done the wrong way or others have done you wrong, when you do these meditations, you can actually undo the karma of it before you die by doing things like forgiving them, forgiving yourself, you know. Forgiveness is one of the most powerful forces in the universe. Okay, so visualize then again, you're in a column of light. And this time, just imagine going into your heart. And that while you're alive, you have been putting something into your heart every minute. And that is a golden energy. You can visualize it as gold. And that is the gold of your soul. How worthy are you? How much love have you put into your heart? And that love is measured in gold. Sense if your heart is even made of gold now. And if it is it like a golden temple? There doesn't seem to be enough gold in your heart. Ask now to put in a nugget of gold, a lump of gold that will grow. sense or have the thought that your ego, the soul or ego in your heart, is the most precious thing you have. The quality of yourself in your heart. Imagine now that you are being given a precursor, a weighing of your ego in your heart to show you what it will be like in the afterlife. Spirit is showing you a kind of preview now. So imagine some golden and silver scales. And the spirit guides and the Christ are holding the scales. They have balanced it. And they're waiting for you to put your ego, your heart and your ego on one side of the scales. And on the other side of the scales is the heart of God. Does your heart weigh the same or even lighter than that of God? Doesn't imagine that you first have to believe in yourself, have faith in yourself. When you've built up enough faith, ask that you have a weighing again. Imagine that what makes your heart lighter is all the things you have done for others. They lighten your heart. Ask to be shown all the good things you have done for others stored in your heart as they fly out and get witnessed by the spiritual world. being asked to return back into this life. But as you do, imagine you're receiving a gift from the spiritual world, from your guides. That gift will help you in the next stage of your life. Get a sense of what that gift might be. It might be an object. It might be a quality. Receive that gift into your heart. Imagine as you fit back into your body, you are fitting in with your soul, and that your body is an instrument of karma, of helping you overcome karma or create karma. The choice is yours.